today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
It's a lot. I feel like I'm just dumping everything on these poor models. They definitely have the hardest job because I'm like, do this, and don't forget that. And oh, by the way, you know, don't forget to go to the surface to get air. It's a lot to take in. And I feel like I'm just fussing at them, but we're trying to create this.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we're learning all about underwater fashion photography. Yeah, so let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Hey, everybody. Raymond here. It is so good to see your faces. I'm just kidding. I can't see your faces, but I can imagine that you are just delighted and happy right now to hear about some photography. As happy as I am, this week we have a great interview for you with a photographer, Matt McGee, who, oh my gosh, some of these images that he creates are incredible. He shoots underwater fashion photography. As if fashion photography wasn't difficult enough, he takes it underwater and adds a whole nother element to the whole equation. So real fun stuff. Be sure to check out the show notes of this episode to see examples of Matt's work and just see what it is that we're talking about, because I'll tell you what, man, you just have to see it to believe it, to be honest, you know? So again, you can see some of those photos in the show notes of this episode, and you want to check them out. They're great stuff. Great. So I'm excited to get on into this one. But before we do, I want to give a huge listener shout out to two of you out there. I know that you're listening. We got Chelsea, who says she left a 5-star review on iTunes. I can't believe it. She says, "I'm not a beginner, but I just discovered the Beginner Photography Podcast and I am obsessed. The variety of information is wonderful. This podcast is for everyone, beginners to pros." Wow, that's great to hear. I love that. And Amanda as well. She says, "Love, love, love." Also gave the podcast 5-star review on iTunes. She says, "I love listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. I've learned so much from this podcast. I have always enjoyed taking pictures, but I've never had anyone to teach me. Raymond and his guests do a great job of explaining different topics about photography." Amanda, Chelsea, man, thank you so much to both of you for leaving a just glowing 5-star iTunes review. As somebody who didn't go to photography school my own self, you know, that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, is to hear the viewpoints of other photographers and how it is that they see the world. Because ultimately, that's what we're just all trying to do. We're trying to find our own voice, and we're trying to figure out how to translate that into an image. So Amanda and Chelsea, I really appreciate you two leaving reviews on iTunes, as it is just the biggest and the easiest and the best way to help out the podcast. And it's totally free. So if you are listening and you're enjoying the podcast at all, I cannot tell you how much I would appreciate and adore you if you were to leave the podcast a review on your favorite podcast player. It truly does help out the podcast more than I can explain. So again, you two, thank you so much. And I know that you are going to get a ton out of this one. You know what? I've never taken a camera. I take that back. I have taken a camera underwater in the, you know, a GoPro waterproof disposable camera. But I've never like brought my Fuji or Canon underwater to take photos. But after this conversation, I think I might want to give it a shot, because it just sounds like so much fun and is truly, you know, one of the things a month or so ago, I had a episode come out called Why Beginners Take the Best Photographs. And essentially it's that, like, you're so new that you haven't been, spoiled by learning from the pros or the rules or all these things, that whatever comes out of you is just free and it's creative. And that's what I love about the idea here, is that, you know, when you get underwater and it's so brand new to you, that whatever you create is just going to be super creative in your own eyes. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. So super excited for this one. Let's go ahead and get on into this interview right now with Matt McGee. You know, Matt, your images have been described as ethereal. They've been described as magical. They have been described as something, you know, from another world for shooting underwater. The type of work that you do is really interesting. The type of images that you capture is something that not many beginners get into, but I think that many new photographers see it and are immediately drawn to it. But before we get into shooting underwater, working with models, and everything that is related to that, can you share with me just how you got started in photography in the first place?
Well, photography in general for me started in my career as a dentist because I had to buy a DSLR to use it at my office to take photos of teeth, which isn't very compelling or ethereal or interesting or anything like that. But it did sort of put a nice camera in my hands to work with. And I just started using it some outside of the office and started playing around with it and seeing what was possible. And, you know, some of these images started to be, you know, I was like, hey, that's not too bad. And I just sort of got interested in creating images that people, you know, reacted positively to. So part of it was that I just enjoyed the final product. And part of it was people's reaction to the things that I was photographing. And they thought, yeah, that's really good. And so I just kept working at it and working at it and working at it. And here, you know, what is it, 15 years later, whatever, how long it's been, you know, I'm still learning and trying to get better. But that's how I got started.
So I think with a lot of new photographers, it's always that, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg type thing? Whereas with a lot of people, it is, you know, they see a vision, they see something in their head, and then they want a way to capture it. And then the camera's their vehicle to be able to do that. But it sounds like for you, it was more of a utilitarian need for this camera. And then what was it about the images that you were capturing that made you think, you know what, I'm going to take this out of my office, and I'm going to see what else I can capture here?
Well, I guess, you know, first I was just interested in the gear and the technology, and I thought that was fun, but I didn't feel like I had any artistic talent at all. But as I started, you know, messing around photographing, I don't know, flowers on trees or something, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I did that. And I think that was sort of feeding off of that is what pushed me in that direction to do more. And as I did that, you discover other photographers and what's possible and what other people are out there doing. And, you know, that inspires you to move to the next level. And I think that's just been such a driving force because it's funny, you know, I'll go back and look at stuff from way back when and I think that's terrible. I'm embarrassed by that. But at the time I was really proud of it. And it was really something that I thought was great. And now there's no way I would put that out for the world to see. And you know, maybe that's going to be the case with stuff that I've done most recently, 5-10 years from now, who knows? But I, you know, I think it's a combination of, you know, photography allows you to, you know, embrace that technology and the gear that's involved with it. But yet incorporate an artistic component to that. And I think that's kind of unique. It's not like painting or sculpting or that type of thing, because we do have these instruments in our hands that we can control how the camera sees things and inject our vision into that and hopefully be able to share that with the world.
Wow. We can inject our vision into that. I like that a lot. That's good. So I totally agree with you. You know, when I was just starting out in photography, it was exactly the same for me. And I think with every other photographer as well, you get excited about these photos that you take. You now gain the experience. You no longer like those photos. So looking back on your earliest photos, what were some of those telltale signs of an amateur photo, I suppose, or something that you don't like about them?
Well, I think, you know, when I started, I probably did like a lot of people did. I thought when I moved from the little green rectangle on my DSLR to put it into program mode, I thought I had arrived, you know. And you really start to, when you look back and you see that, you know, maybe I could have done this focus different. Maybe I could have had a shallow depth of field. Maybe I could have intentionally blurred the image a little bit with a slower shutter speed. When you start to, you know, look back on those things now, to me, I think that was more amateurish because you're letting the camera make those decisions for you, whereas when you go into full manual, you're taking control over that. Because I can put a, you know, let's say I go out and take a picture of the sky and auto mode, it can make it look real blue and pretty. Well, maybe I want to make it look dark and gloomy. Well, now I know how to do that. And in the past, I was just sort of, you know, pointing and shooting at everything I could, and hopefully something good would come out of there. And I think I had a pretty decent eye to curate whatever was decent out of those shots, however amateurish they may have been. But that was sort of that foundation to try to get better. And as I saw other people's work, I was like, yeah, that's okay. What I did was okay, but this is better. How do I do this?
Mm. So was your main source of photography education just inspiration from other photographers?
Yeah, that, and spent a lot of time on YouTube just watching tutorials. And, you know, I don't have any formal training. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, spend a lot of time. And I think one of the great things about digital as opposed to film, because when I initially started shooting, I shot film, actually slides. And with digital, you can shoot it and see right away what you've got. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like cheating now. You've got the histogram on the back and all these things to help you determine if you've got that proper exposure or something that you can at least work with. And you do have that immediate feedback, whereas with film, you don't know until it's been processed. You may shoot 36 exposures and none of them are any good.
Yeah, that's very true. That's definitely happened to me before, so I know exactly what you're talking about. So let's move on. So now that you got the camera, you took it out of the office, you're photographing flowers and just kind of these daily things of your life. Was there anything, like, what was the first thing that, like, really captured your attention to start focusing on in photography? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
Well, I've always loved nature, animals, and the ocean in particular. And I kind of got interested in scuba diving, and I thought, well, I'm going to go down here and document this stuff so people can, A, prove that I was down there, and B, maybe share some of that underwater world with my friends and family. And I learned very quickly that that is a very difficult subject matter. There's so much that goes into it. And I think that it was the challenge of learning underwater photography that was exciting to me. Because I was like, I know I'm starting with zero knowledge, and I can completely start from scratch and learn how to do this and learn what's involved. And that fascinated me, because as I was going through my scuba instruction, I would see these photos in dive magazines and instruction manuals and that kind of thing. I was just blown away. I thought, oh, this is so cool. I'm going to go down there and take the same thing. And I learned very quickly after shooting underwater that I was like, this is way beyond what I'm capable of at this point. It was a whole other level to work with, not just from a photography standpoint, but the diving standpoint of maintaining buoyancy and not stirring up the debris in the water and just all kinds of things like that I never even considered. So then when I look at these photos now that are just perfect and beautiful, you realize what went into that, and it's a lot of work.
Why do you think, like, what was the gap there in the beginning? Like, what were those photos that you took? I as somebody who's never done dive photography, underwater photography, I guess, what are the things that you were capturing, and what is it that you wished were different about them?
Well, I think the first thing that you need to understand about shooting underwater is the light gets filtered out. So the deeper you go, the less color you have. So you have to take your own light source with you. So you're using strobes with all of this stuff. So that pretty coral, unless it's close to the surface, when you're actually diving, if you're down at 80 feet or something, it's going to look blue-green. It's not going to look pretty at all. But when you fire that shot off, your strobes fire and it lights up the coral, and you look on the back of your viewfinder, then all of a sudden you got all these reds and oranges and all these really pretty colors. And that really forced you, or forced me, or anyone that's going to do this, you got to learn how to use that light and how to light your image. And so that's one of the big challenges right there. The other thing is those strobes don't shoot very far. Mm-hmm. And you're talking maybe 6 feet. So that's another challenge as well, is getting close to whatever it is that you're photographing. So it's those types of things that maybe since it is a more difficult type of photography, it forced me to learn some of these concepts that apply to other areas of photography. But I just started with the more difficult stuff as opposed to, you know, lighting in a studio or something like that.
Right, right. I'm assuming that you didn't start off taking strobes underwater with you, or did you?
No, not at first. I didn't. But pretty quickly, I realized I really wanted to do this. And so I got a point-and-shoot camera and put it in a housing and got one single strobe. And it was triggered by a fiber optic cable. So sometimes it fired when you release the shutter. Sometimes it didn't synchronize with it. So, I went down there pretty quickly with a strobe, but it was just one. And it wasn't that powerful.
Mm-hmm. So how long, cause I know that, you know, by this point, like you were saying, you've been doing this 15, 20 years. Tell me how you go from photographing underwater, just coral, nature, sharks, these things, to now do what you're doing today, which is photographing models underwater, because that seems like they're related, but as you dig deeper, it seems, no, wait, these are probably further apart than I would assume.
Yeah, you really don't see a lot of underwater, you know, people that photograph sharks that are doing this, and you don't see a lot of fashion people that are photographing underwater, or underwater fashion that are photographing sharks and octopus and that kind of thing. I think just because I had the gear to do it, and I don't want to say I was bored, but I was just looking for something different to do. And I started seeing some images that people were doing where they were taking these, you know, models underwater with dresses and fabric and everything. And it just looked crazy with these fabrics floating, and it was a weightless environment and all this sort of thing. And I thought, well, now that's cool. And about the same time, I had been approached or joined some Facebook groups to do like model, just Facebook meetups and shoot with some models. And that's how I kind of dipped my toe in that fashion photography thing. And I was like, well, nobody else in town is doing this. And if I want to, you know, I've got a chance here to be like, hey, I can do this. Let's go. And I had a lot of people that were interested, and we just started doing it.
So were you looking to make a name for yourself doing this because nobody else was doing it, or was there a different motivation?
Not necessarily. At the risk of sounding a little cliche, it's about the art, man. I wanted I saw these really, you know, had these cool ideas, and I wanted to go out there and create it. And that's what I did, or that's what we did. And it was more desire to see almost if I could pull it off and do it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get out there and share it with people, but it wasn't like driven by a business. I wasn't trying to get into like doing underwater maternity shoots, for example,
or
engagement photos or something like that. I wanted to create interesting, compelling images that people really liked. What happened beyond that was, you know, is yet to be seen.
Okay, so tell me about that first time. I mean, that's got to be difficult. In my head, you go diving, you capture what's there. Like, that's it. That's the end of the day. But with something like this, like, there's setup. So tell me how that first time, that first shoot that you did with models underwater went.
Well, it was just in a friend's pool. And something that I found out pretty quickly is that pools are kind of dirty. there's a lot of debris in there, and the problem you run into with debris is something called backscatter, and you run into that a lot in the ocean. But what happens if you have your strobes pointing straight forward, all these little particles that are between you and your subject are going to get lit up, and it looks like little white dots or snow all over the place, and it can completely ruin an image depending on the amount of particulates that are in the water. So I found that out pretty quickly, but the photography aspect of it was fine. I had already shot wide angle. I knew what I was doing. But then it became an issue of how do you coach these models? How do you create an image? How do you get these fabrics to flow underwater? How do you do it safely? If you take, you know, a model and put her in a vintage wedding gown and then drop her in 10 feet of water, you got a potentially hazardous situation on your hands. And that was probably my biggest thing. Like, I was, you know, there were a couple of moments the first few times, like, oh shoot, you know, this person could be in trouble. So then you start learning that it takes a team to pull this thing off, because you got to have people on the surface, you got to have people underwater, and all this sort of thing. But the first one, I mean, it was a great learning experience. There were some neat images in there, and I was fortunate enough to have some to work with some people that could do it. Not everybody can model underwater. It's stressful. You have to learn how to control your facial expressions. Not everybody can sink. I know that sounds probably difficult to believe, but that's what I found out quickly, that it's a lot of people just sit at the surface. It's hard for them to get under.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, these are things that I would never think of that are difficult, I guess, to forecast before you go ahead and do something like this. Before we move on to working with models and the gear that's required and things like that, was there anything else that right away you realized, oh my gosh, like this wasn't even, you know, on the radar, and now here I have to deal with this?
I would honestly say it's the clarity of the water. And I hate to just go right back to that, but when you get models in there, you think hair and makeup. They start putting lots of makeup on there. You get enough people in the water, it's going to get cloudy. And I had no clue about that. And I remember, you know, the first time I got under the water, I'd never shot in a pool, or I never had a scuba mask on in a pool. So I could actually see, and you got leaves and twigs and little things floating in the water that you don't normally, you know, pay attention to. But now that I'm down here trying to take photos, you know, it would be as if a bunch of random stuff is just floating in the air.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, it was just the quality of the water and the clarity, or the visibility, to put it in scuba terms, really sort of hit me right away. Now, the first couple of people in the pool, no problem. It's not dirty yet. But after you shot a couple of hours, it can get dirty pretty quickly.
Oh, my gosh. So let's say somebody at home is listening. They have a pool. Is there anything that they can do if they want to get started to ensure that their pool is clear?
Well, I don't own a pool, so I'm at other people's mercy. And I asked them to shock the pool, which I think is the correct term, where they just hit it with chlorine pretty hard for a day or two ahead of time and really run those filters and skimmers and that kind of thing. Because the other thing, I shoot with backdrops now, and you have to turn off those filters because otherwise it'll just suck the backdrop into those little filters on the side. So they need to do as much as they can ahead of time to get that water really clear and ready to go. And then when it's showtime, everything turns off. You got to really pay attention to that environment. So you want as few people in the pool as possible. And you don't want a lot of makeup. You don't want a lot of conditioner in their hair, all this kind of stuff. Suntan oil, whatever. Anything that you put on your body can come off and get into the water and reduce that clarity.
Well, yeah. Wow. These are things that I never would think of, you know, if I wanted to go out and try this. This is awesome. When it comes to photography, as a wedding photographer, I show up on the day, things happen in front of me, I capture it, that's it. Like, I go home at the end of the day. When you're photographing models underwater, what is it that you're trying to capture?
I'm just trying to create some image that looks otherworldly. I'm really big on fabrics and long hair and seeing that flowing in an environment where I like to create an image that doesn't look like it's underwater, and it just takes you someplace else. Now, sometimes I'll put those reflections in there at the surface of the water. So yeah, you can tell that you're underwater from that standpoint, but I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to have people not know exactly what they're looking at, or how'd you do that, you know, that kind of thing. And I'll get some, you know, mood boards or whatever, and look at Pinterest for some ideas, whether it's an underwater photo or you know, an above water photo, and just saying, hey, this is this concept that we're going to go after here, but we're going to do it in a pool, and we're going to make it much more complicated than it would have been otherwise.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients, or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear, like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar. Now, I know that you also do landscape photography, and when it comes to landscape photography, I know the composition is king, right? Like, you really want a strong composition because that can make or break your photo. Is that as at the forefront of your mind when photographing underwater, or does that take a back seat?
I would say with models, it does not. I'm just trying to create a cool image. I want to take this weightless environment, their hair flowing, a big piece of fabric or a dress that just is creating texture and color. And just, I'm not trying to do leading lines or, you know, the rule of thirds necessarily or anything like that. I'm just trying to create something that looks, you know, maybe it's out of a fairy tale or it's surreal or something like that. I just want to, I guess that's the motivation or the composition that we're going for. Now, sometimes it involves more with the lighting, because I'll have the strobes positioned in certain places on the, above the pool, and I'll, you know, want to position the person underneath the strobes, you know, from that standpoint, but it's not necessarily composition in the way that landscape photography is.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So with these strobes, with lighting, you mentioned earlier, if you're going underwater and you're scuba diving, you're going to have a strobe on camera. But as you just mentioned there, sometimes you have them on top, out of the water. Is there a mixture with this?
So what I do with scuba diving now is I have two, and they are off camera. They are connected to the camera by strobe arms, which can be extended out pretty far. So if I'm shooting wide angle, something big like a shark, I'm going to spread those out pretty wide. So the light really kind of is coming out from the side and more at an angle and covers a larger area. If I'm shooting something really small, like a small fish or some sort of shrimp or something like that, I'll pull it in a lot tighter, and I may even use something called a snoot, which sort of focuses the light down into a specific area so I can focus on the subject and, you know, not light up that background so it's not in competition with so that the background isn't competing with your subject. Now, in the pool, I have just changed that over the years, and I'm discovering you can get all kinds of strobes, and you can trigger them remotely with sort of a that's triggered by your strobes. It's like an optical trigger, so you can set them up above the water, pointing down in, off to the side, all over the place. So literally you could have just one on the camera and have it trigger multiple strobes either below or above the water to get the desired effect you're looking for. And that's where really the creativity comes into play. But usually if I get to that point, I've got to rent some extra equipment, because I only personally own two strobes. And when you start putting them above the pool, you got to have, you know, four, five, depending on your situation.
Right, right. Yeah, I can attest to the power of being able to control your own light to, you know, control your image. It really does make a huge difference. When we're talking about strobes, I know that there are like housings that you can buy for your camera. Are you buying housings for a flash or your strobe, or are these underwater specific?
So these are underwater specific strobes, and I think it's very important. I know that other people don't do this, but for me personally, it is very important, and I will never use strobes that are not designed to be used underwater above the water. Now, what I mean by that is if you've got a softbox with a light plugged into an outlet, if that thing falls in the pool, you've got a real problem on your hands.
Oh, yeah.
So from that standpoint, I mean, obviously underwater, yes, there are strobes that are made for underwater use, and they're sealed and all that kind of thing. But the ones above water as well, I make sure that they are and that's an added expense. But that's why I rent some of the gear. But I've seen setups where people have, you know, traditional strobes plugged into a wall. And that just makes me nervous.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, all I think about is, I don't know if it was from the Addams Family or whatever it was growing up, but you know, the toaster in the bathtub. I mean, that's just terrifying to think of, especially when you have a model. Okay, so let's continue talking about safety here, because obviously that's a big thing. Now we know, you know, if you got a strobe and it's plugged into a wall, don't do that. You mentioned earlier about having nice, long, flowy dresses and the safety concerns that can be as well underwater. So what sorts of things do you do to deal with that now?
I get a lifeguard, and I have other people available that may have something that they can grab onto to help pull them up and hold them at the surface. Another thing is, you don't have to do this in deep water. You can do it, and especially if someone's new at this, they're going to have a lot of confidence if they're in some water where they can stand up. So if you can just have them in 4 feet of water, 5 feet of water, all they have to do is bend their knees to get under the water. And if they feel panicked, all they have to do is stand up. And I've created some really cool images in 4 feet of water. And sometimes you can Photoshop it to make it look like you're in the abyss. But I think that the safety of the models should really be at the forefront of what you're doing. And so lifeguards, someone else helping to pull them to the side so they can get to the ladder, whatever to hang on to. And just doing, you know, shallow depth. Mm-hmm. It builds confidence. It's a lot safer. And I think if you're doing this for the first time, I would definitely go to the shallow end of the pool to start working on this.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, if you want to photograph people, you know, families, portraits, weddings, engagements, you know that the elephant in the room is posing. You have a pretty good understanding of how to use your camera, you know how to make a pretty picture, but when somebody steps in front of your lens, well, imagine if you knew how to make them look their best and feel confident. That is what you can do when you understand basic posing techniques. So I want to give you access to my free posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. There are 9 different categories and more than 80 real example photos of poses that you can use for inspiration to rock your next session. Once again, you can download your free photo posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. Now, let's go ahead and get back into today's interview. Are you doing any sort of brief with the model beforehand as far as what things need to be done?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time talking with them, and sometimes I've done these shoots as like a Facebook group where we'll be planning this weeks in advance, and I'll be communicating with everyone. But I know that those don't always get read or remembered, so I'll try to reiterate everything, like when we're in the pool and I'm standing there with them, and I'll just little tips, like, you know, to get under the water, you need to get all the air out of your lungs that you can so you can actually sink. You need to blow the air out your nose, and just make them aware of how far they are from the wall or wherever they need to be to get to safety, those sorts of things. Other things like expression. I mean, a lot of these models are used to being photographed in a studio, and they're, you know, voguing it up and hitting all these expressions and turning fast and all this sort of thing. I'm like, just slow it down. If you move quickly, it's going to stir things up more. You may introduce bubbles into the situation, and that's bad. And, you know, just those sorts of things. And then I like to give them feedback. I'll show them immediately on the back of the camera. This is what you did, and this is the result we got here. Mm-hmm. And also make them comfortable with the fact that you're going to have some really embarrassing facial expressions underwater, because everything is sort of looks a little different. The soft tissue in your face may move around, and it just, there's lots of things that could be a little bit embarrassing, but all we need is that one or two good images, and you can do it. But it's just, you know, being calm, moving slow, maybe making your facial expression above the water and then going below. I mean, you can't have the puffed up cheeks and the closed eyes and all that kind of thing. It's stressful being underwater because we're not, you know, evolved to live underwater.
Of course.
So it's sometimes it's hard to be relaxed. And a lot of what makes these images what they are is that it does look surreal or peaceful when it's anything but. But if the model can really stay calm and keep that peaceful appearance, and the way they have their hands positioned and their toes pointed and all these little things, it's a lot to keep in mind. And I can't tell them that. I can't be down there like, hey, point your toes, do this. You know, we have to go down, shoot a few images, come back up, and then give them that feedback and try again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, every year our family goes to a it's like a water park type thing, and they have this big, you know, nice wave pool. And every year I like to take pictures of the kids and whatnot. So I'll bring out the GoPro. I'll be taking photos of them, and, you know, myself included, my wife. And it's always fun afterwards to look at those photos of us underwater, where you think that you're like, I look good, you know, swimming underwater. And then you look at the photos, and as you said, they're embarrassing. They don't look right, you know. So when it comes to posing these models, as you said, you can't exactly just say, hey, you know, bend your toe a little bit. When you come back up, I guess the question here is, how hard is it for them to get the feedback and then do that when they get back in the water? Because I'm sure every time maybe you twist a little bit different. Are you giving specific bend your toes, bend your knees, or is it more broad ideas of posing?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, you've got. I think I've heard some modeling coach say if you have a joint in your body, bend it. So bend your arms, bend your knees, those sorts of things. Point your toes, those kind of ideas. But then you also need to say, look, spread out. Don't extend your arm towards me. If you're going to move your arm out to the side, if you move your hand closer to me and I'm shooting with a fisheye, or any part of your body is closer to me, I'm shooting with a fisheye, it's going to look gigantic because of the distortion of that type of lens. And I shoot with a fisheye because of the water clarity being a problem. I want to get as close to my subject as I can. So just little, I mean, it's a lot. I feel like I'm just dumping everything on these poor models because I'm like, do this, and don't forget that. And oh, by the way, you know, don't forget to go to the surface to get air. It's a lot to take in. And I feel like I'm just fussing at them, but we're trying to create this, and they definitely have the hardest job. And a lot of people can't do it. They may be the best model on the runway or in the studio. You put them in a pool, and it's a completely different ballgame. And when you can find somebody that can do it, you know, it's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So, like, at an engagement session, I will have – you know, I'll know that I need a series of images, series of poses or something that I need to get. But a lot of those happen just organically. Like, oh, you know what? I like what you did right there. Let's continue with that. For you, are you planning out the poses, the shots, the ideas before so that when a model shows up, you show it to them? And
oh, yeah. I've got a, I will print, well, not for everything, but for a lot of it. I'll print out some images. And I laminated them so I can have them by the pool and not worry about them getting wet. And I've got my pose. Yeah, I've got my pose book, and I'll pull this out and say, do this, this, or this, and kind of give them something to go on. Because most of these people that I've photographed have not done this before, so they're totally out of their element and they don't know what to do. So that just gives them some guidance on what to go by. And then if I work with someone that is a, you know, professional underwater model, then we'll get into something different. And you know, she may bring some ideas that I hadn't considered, and then it's just things like, you know, okay, we got this dress here, we need to fluff this out a little bit more. So you, that's where you get people in, you know, on the side of the pool helping to move things out. So part of it is posing out concepts that you sort of show them to give them sort of their motivation to go by. And then part of it, I guess, it is sort of a little bit organic, that you just like, oh wait, when you move this way, that was really cool what the fabric did, let's try to do that again.
What sorts of things would you do with a professional underwater model who you wouldn't, or that you wouldn't do with, say, a somebody who's doing it for the first time?
Well, I think working in deeper water is probably at the top of the list. The last model that I worked with, she could hold her breath for well over a minute.
Wow.
Maybe over 2 minutes. So she would basically go down to the bottom of the pool and would start fluffing the fabric and spreading it out and that sort of thing before she even started to pose and to move around. And so those kind of things that just come with experience. When you do have a professional, it's completely different. They can turn upside down and just do all these different, you know, movements underwater that other people just sort of go down there and try to do what they would normally do in a studio. Another thing that professionals know to do is to pay attention to where they are relative to the light and to the surface. So when you get close to that surface, that's where you get those mirror reflections that kind of create those cool, surreal images. And they know to slow down and to not blow out all their air, because right there at the surface is where some of those great images are going to be made. And it's just little things like that that they pick up on from experience and know to do, and you don't have to say or tell them to do it. They just do it. They just know.
Yeah, yeah. So when you set up something like this, do you try to set up like 5-10 models in a day to try to get in the pool, or is it just one at a time and you just do this per weekend?
I've done it both ways. I've done two big Facebook meetup groups, and we had probably, I don't know, 12, 15, maybe more models throughout the course of a weekend.
Wow.
And the only downside of that is with that many people in the water, by the time the people that were getting there later in the day, the pool clarity was gone. And so I felt bad for them because their images were not as good as the ones that we had in the morning, just based on the simple fact that the water was in better condition. But that's one of those things that you learn, and, you know, you don't make those mistakes again. So in the more recent shoots, you know, might be just a handful of people over a shorter period of time. I've done a little bit of both, and I've found that I guess less is best, because the fewer people you have in the pool, the better that quality of the water is. I had a safety diver at one point. We had three photographers shooting. You know, some of them had their GoPros. It was just a mess. There were just so many people. We had a blast and it was fun, but it just, everything was getting stirred up with all the people and all the, the quality of the water was just not good.
Right. Yeah. I would imagine that's pretty important. That's essentially a new lens for you, because it's right. Like it's in front of the camera. It's going to be something that is in between you and your subject there.
Yeah, and then it was when it was just me and this one model. It was fantastic. We just, you know, we got a lot done in a short period of time, and everything looked great. So it's just easier to do it that way, I think.
Yeah, I bet. So when you have just a handful of models, like you were saying, is the goal for you variety, or hey, let's get in and see what we can capture?
I mean, it's nice to have variety, but if you look at a lot of my images, I'm into those, you know, black backdrops and those sorts of things. So I think I've got a lot of repetition and from that standpoint, but you do just try to get out there and see what you can create, because there's not a lot of people doing this, although there's becoming more and more. It's just seeing what you can create, seeing what you can come out with, you know, and, you know, just have a bunch of, we usually have several dresses and pieces of fabric and, you know, jewelry and all these props and that kind of stuff. And just let's see what happens. Maybe they've got some cool idea that we can try out. And it's a lot of fun to do them. I mean, it's work. I'm exhausted at the end of those days, but it's just fun to see what you can come up with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you mentioned backdrops, do they make specific underwater backdrops?
Not that I'm aware of. The big backdrop that I have is completely, it's just black. And what I did is I ordered some king size flat sheets off of Amazon, and then got them all stitched together. So it is massive. I can cover pretty much the whole end of a pool with this thing. Now, the problem is that it won't stay weighted down. So you have to weight that thing down. And that's one of the biggest, you know, challenges of the whole thing, not only to get it set up initially, but to keep it weighted down throughout the shoot, because as people are moving around, it churns up the water and it'll tend to make the backdrop move. If someone makes them, I don't know who does. So I just made my own.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what's the phrase? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was a little tough to find a seamstress who could stitch that together for me, but I found one and it's done, and I've been able to use it lots of times since then.
That is so cool. That is so cool. So let's keep talking about gear, I guess. If I were to think about getting into this, you know, maybe just to get started, I'd probably use just a GoPro. Is that a good place to start? And if so, what's the next step?
Yeah, a lot of people have GoPros. They're common. You can just go down to Best Buy or Target or whatever and pick one up, and you can just play around with that. And the nice thing about a pool, I mentioned earlier that a lot of the light gets filtered out. Well, the first 8 or 10 feet, not too bad. So you're not losing a lot of that, and using a strobe isn't as critical. But you can just practice on techniques and maybe getting some of those reflection shots at the surface and that type of thing. You could even buy housings for an iPhone. So there's the budget starts off kind of cheap, and then you can go all the way up to super expensive with these, you know, high-end custom housings. But so GoPro is probably the easy thing. You can You can even buy filters to put over the lens to do the color correction for you. I think you can get some strobes maybe. So that's a start. You could move on to like a point-and-shoot camera that could go in a housing, sometimes made by the camera manufacturer, or if not, by third parties, like a company like iClite makes a lot. That's the brand that I use. They make housings for lots of different cameras. And once you get into with a point-and-shoot, then you start having situations where you can mount strobes on there and have the sync cables and having it all, you know, work together like it normally does with your camera. Then you move up to the DSLR, and that's where the real investment takes place, where you have a housing just for the camera body, and then you have what they call lens ports and port extensions for the depending on the different lens that you have on there. So for wide angle, for example, I'll use what's called a dome port, which looks – it's just it's not like a big contact lens that goes over the camera. And then you have another little piece of plastic that just extends the dome port out to the end of the lens depending on how long that lens is, whether it's really short like a fisheye or maybe it's a 17 to 40. And I've got to – so they make all those parts and pieces for that. The nice thing about the housings – that are made for a DSLR is you can connect the hot shoe, and then it has external connection, so I can hook up a sync cable, so there is no delay. When I fire that shutter, those strobes are going to fire just like if I had a speed light on top of my DSLR. And when you get to that, then you're moving up to then you're getting into some really quality equipment to take those great images.
Yeah, I bet. Could you tell me once more the name of the underwater housing manufacturer that you use?
The one that I use is called iClite. It's spelled I-K-E-L-I-T-E.
Okay.
And their housings are sort of that clear plastic. I'm not exactly sure, 100% sure what the material is, but it's kind of nice because if you get a leak, you can see it. You know you're in trouble. You need to get the thing out of the water as quickly as you can. But as far as DSLRs, I mean, yeah, that's the higher end stuff. But iClite is kind of a for the masses type of thing. It's a less expensive type of housing than say a company like CNC is another manufacturer. Subal is another manufacturer, and those companies are quite a bit more expensive. You can get into $4,000 or $5,000 just for the camera housing itself. That doesn't include any lens ports, port extensions, lighting, sync cables, none of that stuff.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine, though, if you're doing this commercially, that that investment to protect your, $15,000 camera and lens right there is kind of a no-brainer, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about, one of the easiest ways to get into this that I've seen, on Amazon are like these bags that you kind of put your camera into. Have you tried any of these? Are these even viable?
I've never tried one, so I can't speak from personal experience. It does seem that it would give you a little bit more flexibility in terms of changing out lenses than you would get with say, a GoPro, which is going to be all wide angle. So if you want to do any, like, portraits or up close shots, you really wouldn't have that option as much as with a wide angle lens as you would with being able to change out to a different focal length. I don't know how secure they are in terms of keeping the camera dry. I have flooded one camera in my time and completely destroyed it. The nice thing about GoPros, at least I feel like those are pretty secure, and some of the GoPros don't even need a housing anymore. They're good to up to 30 or 60 feet, so that's something nice right there. But if you're going to have a DSLR, I don't know that I would feel comfortable putting it in a bag system because it could fail pretty easily. If I've had my multi-thousand-dollar housing fail on me, that's probably the chances of it happening with a bag system are probably pretty high. The other thing that's nice about the like my housing system and some of the others built specifically for DSLRs is they allow you to pull a vacuum, and what that does is it sucks all the components together, and it's about as close to being foolproof as you can get. And it'll have a little light that blinks if there's air leaking out of it. A little red light will blink and let you know your housing is not sealed up well. You need to take this apart and put it back together and get it right. And that's saved a lot of cameras over the years.
Yeah, I'm assuming that you invested in that after your first housing failed. Can you tell me about that situation? What was that like?
Well, it was basically I had gone from shooting with a 100mm lens during the day, and we're going to do a night dive in this place called Cocos Island, where there's you know, hundreds of sharks hunting at night, these little white-tipped reef sharks. It's really cool to see. So I need to get my wide-angle lens in there, so I switched to the 17 to 40, and I put it together without one of the O-rings in there. And it looked like it was sealed, and everything seemed fine. And I got down to, of course, this was a night dive, so I couldn't see in the thing anyway. I couldn't tell leaking. And then I just fired this one shot, and the strobes went nuts. I'm like, what was that? And then it was no longer working. And I got up, got back on the boat, and there was about a cup of water floating around in there, and that was it.
Oh, no. Yeah. So this was unfortunately user error. It sounds like it wasn't, a manufacturer error.
Correct. I mean, I think as with a lot of things related to photography, a lot of times it is, it is user error. And this was it was on me. I mean, I was not careful. I did not pay attention to the fact that O-ring had fallen out of there, and so there was a leak.
Does that camera and housing now like sit somewhere in your house as like a trophy to always remember?
Yeah, I'll mess with people sometimes because it's totally ruined, and I'll like be walking around and I'll drop it on the floor, like, oh my god, or just spill a drink on it or something like that, because it's never coming back to life. So sometimes it's kind of a funny prop to mess around with people.
I bet. That's hilarious. Matt, when I was getting ready for this interview, this is one of those things that it was difficult for me to come up with a comprehensive list of questions just without having the experience. But so I guess my last question here for you, is there anything that maybe I didn't ask you today that you want to make sure that listeners fully understand about shooting underwater, or any of the challenges that you face while doing it?
Well, it just, be patient with yourself. Really get to know your gear, because it's not only your camera gear, your housing gear. If you're doing scuba, it's your scuba gear. You've got to get to the point that you are so comfortable with all of that it's almost second nature to you, so you can focus on what you're trying to accomplish, what you're doing shooting underwater. And it's not easy. It's not going to come quickly. I've worked with people before, and they were frustrated that coming out of the gates, they couldn't create images that looked like some of the stuff that I was doing. And I'm like, I did this for like 10 or 12 years. I've been doing this for a long time to get to this point, whether it's, photographing sharks in the ocean or models in a pool. There's it's just not something you learn overnight. It is challenging, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, these shoots, seeing the expression on some of these models' faces when I have an image that's still in camera and they're just blown away and they love it, that's really cool. And then by the time you get it edited up and it looks the way you want it to, and you created something that, you're not the only person that does it, but there's not a lot of it out there. That's pretty satisfying as well. But it takes a little time to get to that point. So just stick with it. Whether it's in the pool or whether it's the ocean or whatever, wherever you're shooting, just be patient. You're gonna make mistakes. I guess that's like anything. But with this, it's just, to me, of all the types of photography I've done, this is the most difficult. And for whatever twisted reason, I started with it. I mean, that's just, I should have just now be getting to that. And as opposed to the first time I had a DSLR, or soon after I got, taking it in the ocean.
That's hilarious. Have you ever thought about marrying the two worlds of doing like models and sharks at the same time? Is that a possibility?
Oh, I thought it, and people have done it. And now you want to talk about next level stuff. That is impressive. Where you're, there's some great images. There's a dive location in the Bahamas where they have a wreck. So there's this boat down there, and they've got tons of Caribbean reef sharks swimming around. So they take the model down, and she'll be on shared scuba with someone, and she'll have a mask on and that type of thing with a dress. And I mean, this is highly, highly dangerous. I do not suggest this unless you've had years of experience in a team. But this is what other people are doing. You've got multiple safety divers, you've got experienced models that know how to do this type of thing. And you see these images, and she's up on the bow of this ship, and the dress is just flowing in the current, and these sharks are swimming around her, and she just looks so chill. And I'm like, that's really cool. I've not had the opportunity to do it, but I know some of the people that have, and it's very impressive to see these images. It's quite cool. So that's being done. Some people are diving in the cenotes, which are these sort of like underwater caverns, usually in Mexico. That's pretty cool. I've seen some where they've got models with the some of the World War II wrecks in Truk Lagoon, with like the tanks and the wrecked airplanes and those sorts of things. But the main ones are these models in dresses with sharks, whether they're walking on the sandy bottom or if they're on a wreck or something like that. Those are some cool images.
I can't imagine how terrifying it must be to, you know, just the amount of adrenaline that you would have to have as a photographer just running through your veins to be able to capture something like that. But I look forward to keeping up with you, obviously, and seeing these images come from you, because I know that you're going to make it happen, which is going to be awesome. So for the listeners, would you be willing to share where they can find you online and some examples of your work?
Sure. So Matt McGee Underwater. .com is my website, where you can see examples of the fine art stuff with the models, as well as the sharks and the fish and that type of thing. So that's probably the best place for the underwater stuff. And then on Instagram, Matt_McGee_underwater for the same type of thing. But yeah, I mean, I try to put stuff out there and share it with everyone. And so, yeah, I appreciate it. Take a look. And if people have any questions about how I did that or where I did it or, you know, just something as simple as finding the models. I mean, sometimes that's a huge challenge. I'm happy to try to help out and point people in the right direction, or maybe gear questions, that kind of thing.
Right on. Well, Matt, again, man, thank you so much for coming on, sharing all your knowledge today. And like I said, I look forward to keeping up with you in the future and seeing that future model under the water on a shipwreck, just surrounded by shark shots that you're going to get someday. I know you're going to do it.
All right, man. I appreciate your confidence. I look forward to doing it.
Let me ask you, who else is looking on Amazon right now for camera housings, underwater housings? Doesn't that sound like fun? Really, you know, when you look at these photos, when I first started looking at Matt's photos, I thought, wow, these are really, really interesting photos here. Everything is like so different. You know, you can't really, you kind of remove a little bit of the posing element to photography, which I know that, you know, myself, when I was brand new to photography, that was one of the hardest things for me. I went to school for cinematography, so dealing with people was the last thing that I ever thought that I would have to do. So when it came to posing, it was difficult for me in the beginning, I'll be honest. So there's something about the idea of, you know, putting somebody underwater and allowing them to just be free and just, you know, let their body do whatever it's going to do and capture that and make it magical, ethereal, you know, all these things. There's an element there that is really exciting. So I would love to hear your biggest takeaway from this episode. Be sure to leave it in the, you know, leave me a comment in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community. Let's have a discussion about this. Is this something that you'd be willing to do? Because there is a lot logistically, from safety to, you know, your gear, lighting, composition, which, you know, again, hearing Matt talk about how texture is so, so, so important, texture and color over composition. That was another great takeaway. So again, I would love to hear your biggest takeaway in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community. Feel free to click the link in the show notes if you want to join, or just search Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast. You'll find it there. And with that, I think that we are at the end of this week's interview. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to try something new, you know, something that maybe you've never done before. Photograph everything with a super wide angle lens. Photograph everything with a super telephoto lens. I don't know, like do the opposite of what you do, just to kind of change up the mind a little bit and see if you can photograph things a little bit differently. So with that, I'll let you go. Until next week, keep shooting. Stay safe. I love you all.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.